that the CAT labor union is recognized and respected collective voice of CAT workers, and two, a public announcement of CAT's intention to reverse every so-called, quote, model policy, unquote, that was given. This is all part of their unilateral moves, you know, that are supposed to be subject to collective bargaining. And three, immediately terminate the relationship with the union busting firm, Baron Liebman, and apologize for involving CAT funds in with an entity so dramatic, diametrically opposed to CAT's mission and membership, and publicly commit to bargaining in good faith. Speaking of CAT funds, I think that the word is that these union busters are being paid something like, you know, $380 an hour to manipulate this process. And as a CAT member myself, I'm outraged. Anyway, so moving moving back to our guests.
How can our listeners get in touch with you and keep updated on Clue's struggle?
So we have a Facebook page, and we have it's CAT Labor Union. That's okay. What it is, AJ?
Yeah, and the Instagram too is the same one.
CAT Labor Union, hit us up if you want to get to know us. We would like to get to know you. Follow us. We're fighting for tenants' rights and worker rights.
Aside from the petition, are there any other actions going on or planned in the future that you can speak to?
There is, I mean, that we do want to have like a community in like a live stream event, like Meet Clue. We have a feeling that there probably won't be a Meet Baron Liebman event. But we think that the workers have some pretty amazing stories, and that they're doing it for the right reasons, and that that's what we want to put front and center.
And that wraps it up for Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday, 6 o'clock on KBOO Portland. You've been listening to Community Alliance of Tenants Labor Union member Koya Crespin and president of the Communication Workers of America Local 7901, AJ Mendoza. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
So welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo, and I'm here talking today with, can you tell me your name, please?
My name's Bad Bob, but my real name's Bobby Benford, and I'm a Washington State prisoner in Washington State Penitentiary.
Oh, great. Well, it's so nice to have you on the show. I just wanted to talk to you today about some of the issues that you have to deal with in your life as a person who's incarcerated within the Washington State Penitentiary. And maybe if you could tell me a little bit about your life story and the things that you struggle for with justice.
Okay. First, thank you for creating a space to possibly make change in a lot of young people's lives. I was incarcerated in 1972 for helping somebody run away from home, and I escaped from the juvenile institution, which was actually just a detain center, but they called it an escape, and I was the first one in Washington State to be convicted for escape from the Green Hill. I've gone 20 minutes. I lived a block and a half away. I was convicted in Lewis County. I was given a sentence of a year and a half. I didn't get out for 23 years later, except for escapes. I've escaped probably 7 times. My recent escape, they said I got on a computer and gave myself medium custody and went from a supermax to a medium custody facility, and it was all scratching their heads while I was there. And I spent 3 years. I just got out. Just spent a 3 year for being an activist in prison, and starting a food strike. So then I got out, and they said I escaped, and they put me down there for another 18 months.
Could we
probably in the last 25?
Thank you.
Years. I've done 9 years.
Thank you. Could we stop there for just a minute? I'd like to hear more about what you were doing as an activist in the prison with your food strike.
Okay.
Why don't you tell me about that? What was that about?
Well, they were taking away our clothes and doing a lot of stuff that they already knew was wrong. This was a change in 1987, and I had already came back from doing a 23-year stretch. I was out for 8 months. And I came back, and I'm doing a sentence now of 6 life without parole for bank robbery and 3 first-degree assaults on police officers, felony, looting, and car theft. So I'm out in the prison yard, and things have changed a lot. They changed a lot from the time that I came into prison and went to Shelton, Monroe, and Walla Walla. This was back in the time in the early 70s when actually the pendulum swung from rehabilitation to punishment. From punishment to rehabilitation. We got to grow our hair long. I'm Native American. And we got down back then. We got down and got our sweat lodge. We got our drum. We got our pipe. When before they never allowed us to practice our religion in prison or grow our hair long. There was a lot of struggles going back from then. Prison was overcrowded. It was almost twice the capacity. The prison system, I believe, is based on the pendulum swinging from punishment to rehabilitation. I think the totalium type reign that they had, they gave us everything we wanted. They gave us clothes, they gave us food package, they gave us unlimited access to people coming from the streets and colleges and into our little programs, our prison awareness, our lifers program, our Native American program. We teach classes at University of Washington, Seattle University. But inside the environment, it was extreme violence. There's a lot of murders. I was schooled down by a lot of people that were, there wasn't no gangs around, but there was murder incorporated. The death rate and Walla Walla was matched that in San Quentin, which is the worst for murder rate. We had an average of killing once a week. So, there wasn't nobody fighting. People, they'd trick you out of your life. People were a little more sophisticated back then. You had a lot of the revolutionaries come in, a lot of the communist people come in, a lot of people from the Vietnam War. So, with that, they came in, they learned how to make explosives, and they were blowing up the police and blowing their hands off, and there was guns in prison. I mean, I'm not here to rat everything off, but those times are past, and a lot of my old partners and my friends, I see them all dying off now. I'm 62 years old now. I spent a total of probably 48 years in prison. There has to be change. There has to be change. They took away my identity and replaced it with something else when I was a juvenile. I came in, I just kept escaping, and I started robbing banks all my life. I'm a serial bank robber. And what they replaced it with was a lot of violence. I mean, I didn't want to be a victim, and I wanted to change, and I was being schooled also by a bunch of good people that were making the prison change from overcrowding. I believe Senator Ray Moore came in. He wrote me a letter to try to get me out. I had the Seattle PI behind me. I had a lady sponsor that was the general manager of the PI. Dick Fazio was the general manager in the Randolph Hearst on the newspaper, that in the Seattle Times. And they came in and they got me out of prison, and I was out for like 38 days. And I created another fence. And so what I like to see in the prison is the change. We made a lot of changes. Now they're using pepper gas. They militarized their prisons. Their solution for mental health is to give you a bunch of pills. And there's a lot of reentry wasn't happening back then. I see now that they had to have more funding for the reentry programs. I think President Bush helped us with that, and called the Second Chance Act. Well, when I was in prison, for me, survival was at all costs, and I became a troublemaker. Even though I was an activist, I became knowledgeable in manipulation and moving others. And I, like I said, I spent a lot of time in isolation. Before I got released in 1995, I was in the maximum security unit on death row with my neighbor being Charles Campbell. Charles Campbell, he's pretty, they were getting ready to execute him. And that night that they executed him, he ate a whole bunch of pills, a bunch of Seroquel, and then they extracted him out with pepper gas, and cut his clothes off and chained him up and put him on the back of the food cart and sent him in to death row. And he wouldn't get up and talk to his attorney. He wouldn't talk to the preacher. He wouldn't eat his last meal because he was OD'd on Seroquel. And then when they hung him, I believe that he had already was so either incapacitated or dead from the Seroquel, and they hung him. My point is, right after that, they let me out of prison. I was married. I got married in prison. I had a wife. I was out for 8 months. And the last 3 months, I just couldn't adjust, and I pretended like I was a construction worker, and in all actuality, I was a bank robber, and I just robbed banks for, like I robbed 20 of them, and their statute of limitations and all this, plus I'm doing life without anyway, so it's like I'm buried alive in here. For me now, in my school, a lot of people want activism, a lot of reentry. I started a nonprofit for use of incarcerated Native parents and diverse families. I'm trying to...
What is that nonprofit called?
Use of Incarcerated Native Parents and Diverse Families. I have my state certification. I'm trying to get my federal tax number right now. And it's hard for me because I don't have a job. I haven't had a job in 4 years. I'm just idle. I just challenged them on the school. And based on my poverty, I owe like $10,000 just on indigent stuff from being in the hole or indigent postage and creating a debt. I owe like $10,000. So there's no way, even if they did give me a job, that I could pay for my reduced credits. So I challenged that. And now I got a FAFSA application, and I should be going to school here and get the business degree. And then I'm applying that toward my nonprofit because I feel like I'm alive. I'm not just saying yes to you know, being buried alive. I see too many of these guys in here. They come in, they're young, they got life without parole. Some of them had young guys that left and come back with life without parole. They're just handing out a lot of time to these youngsters. And I believe that in the prisons that were overcrowded and twice the design, the protection of our children from violence, reasonable safety and self-harm, the jeopardy was for future injury. They got a case called Farmer versus Brenham. This is a future injury, and it's enough that given these sentences violate standards of decency from an extreme deprivation. When these juveniles come to the prison, they lock them right down.
That's a great case. Is that a case that's in situ, or is that a case that's already been decided, Farmer versus Brown?
Farmer versus Brenham was a case that was decided a long time ago, and it dealt with a gay person that was going through a sex change, and they put him out in the big yard of the penitentiary, and he told him, "Hey, I can't go out there because, you know, look at me. You know, I'm transitioning to be a woman. This guy's eating your life." And then they made him go out there, knowing what was going to happen. And that's where the future dangerousness is. That applies to medical. That applies to assaults. That applies to, and I believe it applies to a serious injury of what they're doing to our youngsters.
And it should apply to COVID, too.
And it should apply to COVID, too. You know, speaking of the COVID thing, I'm Native American. We have a sweat lodge, and this protected us back in the 1700s from the, or even before then, from the biological warfare that was waged. We're the first people to ever have biological warfare waged on them. This is no different. The COVID is no different, and they've taken our sweat lodge away here. We haven't had our sweat lodge, and have our sponsor come in, and it gets pretty hot in the sweat lodge, and and there's you know, we get inside there, when we bring these big old hot red rocks in there, it probably gets 170 degrees, and we suffer. We suffer, we pray, and we're purified, and there's no way a germ's going to survive that, especially if we're sitting in there for like 3 hours, and then we come out, and we're anew. We're born anew, and I think that they should bring back our sweat lodge and let us have our spiritual gathering. So,
when did they stop allowing you to do your sweat lodge?
Well, they stopped us when the covert started, probably in March. I believe that's when they stopped us. They stopped the sponsor from coming in, and which is Robin, which is he's a good man. He's a little older, and they stopped him from coming in. They stopped us from going out and just doing it ourselves, which, you know, they could. There's no least of restrictive means of us practicing our religion. We go out at nighttime and circle up, and there's about a, you know, dozen, 12, 13 of us just stand around. We smudge up. We offer our voice. We send our voice up, and we send up smoke, and that's how we're sending our voice. We pray for the people that have COVID. We pray for the people that, you know, our families and all our relations. Even, you know, that's something about natives. Even though they've taken, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, they've taken our religion. Even when we came to prison, they put us in the intensive management unit. And I heard a brother give me a message one time. He says, look, you got that fire in your heart, and you got that straight red road. Just when they cuff you up and they put you on that leash and walk you to the shower and lock you in that bars of the shower, those are like the ribs of your mother. And you press that hot water, and the hot water comes out and the steam, and you have all the elements there. And so it's good to and you already have the medicines inside you. So once you've had the smudge with the sage, cedar, and the sweet grass, and the lavenders, that's already in you. So they can't take our lives away. They can't take our spirit. You know, we're warriors. At one time, I was a gladiator and lived in a gladiator school and ran around with knives, and 300 people on each side would attack each other, and the National Guards. This is Monroe. I've been through three of this. Monroe, the National Guards would come in, and the three riots were because of Indians. We lived like we were surrounded. And the National Guards come in and circled the whole penitentiary and went down the center, and every third National Guard, there's a German Shepherd dog, and we lit the place on fire. There's a lot of string violence, 27 injured, one dead. That wrote about me in a book called Gladiator School. It's about Monroe Reformatory. He put me in there, Bad Bob, and
when did you go?
He got me.
When did you go to Monroe Reformatory? How old were you?
In Monroe Reformatory, I was 18 years old. And when I became 19 years old, I became a boxer. They used to have a boxing ring in here. So I've had over 100 amateur fights and 3 pro fights. And I pulled knives out of my neck. I got stab marks all down my back. My hands are cut up. I've been, like I said, I lived in a gladiator school. And I came there, and the last riot we had, I believe, was in 1981. In 1983, I went from there to McNeil Island, and the feds just gave that penitentiary over to the state, and I lived there for a while.
You're listening. Sorry, I'm just going to do a station ID real quick. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking with Bobby Bedford. Bobby Bedford has spent 48 years in prison, mostly in Washington State, and is a Native American activist and has some really amazing stories to share about his activism and his work within the Washington State Penitentiary System, where he's currently incarcerated. I'm sorry, Bobby, please continue.
Okay, I think that I was back in Monroe, and Monroe was overcrowded. I think they had 1275, the place was built for 650 people. We roamed around, and it was like beyond the Thunderdome. I've seen the guards throw their keys down and say, I've been to Vietnam, why quit and get out of there? I've seen extreme riots. I've been involved in extreme riots. There's a book called Concrete Mama that talks about Walla Walla and the penitentiary, the Walla Walla. I lived up there and was...
You have 60 seconds remaining.
I was fooled by, murder incorporated guys, guys that are just like geniuses, but they're socially deviant or delinquent. Some are emotionally disturbed. Some have serious problems. And I see a lot of them old timers right now. They're passing away in prison. For me, it was survival of cost.
You have 30 seconds remaining.
Possible manipulations and maneuvering others for advantage. And I'm going to call back, okay?
Have a prepaid call. Oh, yeah. You will not be charged for this call. An inmate at Washington State Penitentiary. This call will be recorded and monitored.
Hey, Bobby. So, Bobby, we have about 10 minutes of... left on the interview. We're talking with Bobby. He is a Native American activist and a currently incarcerated person within the Washington State Penitentiary System. He's served 48 years in prison of his 62 years of life and has done some really amazing things in prison and is sharing some of his stories with us. Bobby, please continue.
Okay. You know, when I came to prison, I made an identity out of being a prisoner. I made an identity out of being a convict. For me, I've never told on anybody. I've never used anybody to get to another position or to a better place. I've had a lot of people step on my neck to get there. I have over 100 team shepherds. I find a lot of oppression with the police because I am an activist. We've had food strikes. I did a 3-year program for a food strike. That was in a while back, but we've had food strikes here recently. When last time I went to the hole, I beat somebody up and they had to bring him back to life twice. And I did actually first time I ever got an actual write-up. And so I spent a time in IMU. While I was down in IMU, I transformed. I was just sitting there and I was thinking all this stuff that I was just talking about, my life situations. And they're extreme. Pulling knives out of my neck, being shot during riots. I've had people write about me. I've had people write books about me. I've had them say stuff that is for them to get to other places. For me, when I'm in them isolations and I'm in them places, that's what I have to hold on to. Well, this last time I was in the IMU, I transformed. I was just laying in bed. I kind of got into my center, and I transformed. All of a sudden, I just felt like I was like the Wizard of Oz when they pulled the curtain back, and it was just an old man pulling all the big levers and stuff for them. And I could see who I really was. I could see that those things that I was fronting to be wasn't me. Those are my life situations. I was pretty present, and it's hard for me to explain the transformation, the things that happened at that moment of the instant. It was like I found eternity. I found the spirit keeper that was looking after me. Some people call that the Holy Ghost and the source. And I found out that I'm really not all these things. I'm not really all this convict, this boxer, this killer, this bank robber, all these things. I could see that I was not. Those things were in my past. And that's where my problems were, my past and my future. Right now, I do a nonprofit. I try to stay present. I try to create space that we can communicate with our family and our children and our loved ones. It's hard for me to do, but I'm getting it done. And like being a fighter, I don't quit. I get back up off every blow I take. I get back up. This is how I'm fronting with my nonprofit. This is how I'm helping people get their Social Security cards, helping them get their housing, how to get their communication with their children that they've abandoned. I roast them and talk to them bad, and then I have them writing a journal for the children, so when they become 12, 13, 14 years old, they have the answers, because they're searching for the answers, and they'll be searching the rest of their lives. If we don't have, as parents, let them know that it wasn't their fault that we came to prison, it wasn't their fault that we were with their mothers, and the things that we did. A lot of these people have done violence to their women, to their loved ones, to themselves. They've had a relationship with themselves. This transformation helped me to see all the things that I wasn't, all these things that I claimed on the show, all these things that happened, they're all true. And I don't have to worry about any repercussions because I got an immunity from everything. I got a life without, I got 6 life without parole sentences. That's 6, 999 years, 99 months, and 99 day sentences, which is crazy if you ask me. There's no parole in Washington State, so there's nobody to ask to get out. I find that this transformation has helped me to better not have a relationship with myself, but to have relationships with others. Can I ask that if anybody's has concerns or questions or anything like that, they could get on my J-Pay and communicate with me that way? Is that possible, Emma?
Yes.
Well, my name is Bobby Bedford. You can get on there. My number is 630-941. I believe they changed my name to Robert Bedford when they convicted me. Robert's not my name, but I think it's on J-Pay. Anyways, I would like to remember that, you know, the Creator placed me on this earth, and He placed me here to give back. I am the eyes and ears of the Creator. I'm the eyes and ears of God. That's why it's so hard sometimes to find God, because God's inside you, and He's inside all things. When I made this transformation, I had a connection with all things, and I understood this. And I understood why I'm here on earth and why I made this transformation, and it's to give back. I've been taken for so long and taken so long. It's time to give back. I've lived in here for today and tomorrow, today and tomorrow, today and tomorrow. Nothing on the other side of tomorrow. Well, what I have is nothing from tomorrow and nothing for the past. What I have is to offer up, give right now. Just like I'm meeting you and the people that are listening to this story, we're meeting right now. We're not meeting in the future or in the past. Right now. I apologize to my victims, which are basically police officers and the bank tellers, the people that I've harmed. I wrote a letter for resolution, and I felt this was part of that's in my heart to understand what my heart's for and to give back. They don't have an obligation to accept my apology, but it's there. It's there for them so they can get on and grow and move to the next place. I feel that people's harm to society should be taken consideration for their crimes, the magnitude of it, and a person's culpability in it. And I believe Weston has no parole, and I hope someday that they change their minds. And right now there's no one to ask, and sometimes there's been legislation in, but it's never passed. I'm a kind of a legal beagle, so I am a legal beagle, so I help a lot of people's lives out, make a lot of difference in the errors they made in their sentencing and the ineffectiveness that they've had in their trials. And they moved me first time from a maximum security setting for like 47 years, and they moved me out here. I'm in the medium custody now. And the medium custody was a whole lot less oppressive. There's a microwave here. I'm getting fat. People treat each other a little different.
Bobby, we're just about out of time, Bobby. I would just like to, just one more time, we're talking with Bobby Bedford. He's a Native American activist, currently incarcerated in the Washington State Penitentiary System. Bobby, if people would like to get a hold of you, how can they reach you? And also tell us one more time, the name of your nonprofit.
My nonprofit is Children of Use of Incarcerated Native Children and Diverse Families. I want to create the space on that to have us communicate with our people, to have reentry, to have drug and alcohol, to set up. My vision for it is to set up so our children and our family can have outings in the parks and get together and we can donate and be charitable to them and create pictures and create things so they can talk with their parents.
Thank you. And Bobby, if...
Penitentiary,
mm-hmm.
1313 13th Street, Walla Walla, Washington, 99362. My name's Robert Minford, 630-941. You can get at me at J-Pay. You can ask me anything, and I'll give you the most genuine answer, because that's what I do.
Thank you for
my word, and God bless everybody.
Thank you, Bobby. It's been a pleasure having you on Prison Pipeline.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be able to tell my story. Thank you very much.
And that was an interview with Bobby Bedford, currently incarcerated at Washington State Penitentiary. If you'd like to learn more about Bobby's nonprofit, you can visit myredrobe.com. Now stay tuned for a brief commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Dancing in the street. An American president loses his hard-fought re-election bid. And within moments, the streets are full of people who are beyond exultant. They are singing. They are dancing. Dancing. And I've never seen such a thing, nor was it expected. The end of the Trump regime was within sight, and people in Philadelphia, New York City, Wilmington, Delaware, and San Francisco exploded into the streets, expressing paroxysm of purest joy. What could it mean? I think it reflected the heaviness of state repression, the aura of threat and intimidation being lifted, and the psychic thought expression. People felt like they could breathe again, sing again, and even dance again. As soon as I saw it, I thought of the song Dancing in the Street by Martha Reeves of Martha and the Vandellas, a song popular in the 60s, Dancing in the Street from Imprisoned Nation. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance